Questions?
I'm Jay Cotton with NewBridge, New Mexico. A question for you, Steve. And one thing that I find the presentation somewhat deficient in is describing the mission needs for the nuclear facility in particular. But the specific question that I'm interested in, in the last couple of weeks, Mr. Winchell, manager of Los Alamos NNSA, among other things, was saying in the press that the nuclear facility would be necessary for LANL's non-proliferation programs. And I've never heard a description of the non-proliferation programs that would occur there. And specifically, I'm interested in segregating out so-called non-proliferation programs for mixed oxide fuel fabrication, which is controversial, and it's kind of snide on my part, but I actually regard that as a proliferation program rather than a non-proliferation program. But this has to do with the amount of quantities of special nuclear materials that would be involved. And why can't LANL's non-proliferation programs take place within the lab, RAD lab, that does have that administrative limit of 8.4 grams plutonium-239 equivalent? So I'm looking for justification of the public statement made by the LASO manager that the nuclear facility was necessary for LANL's non-proliferation programs.
You probably read through the complex transformation EIS. Did you find that to be useful or not, or in this discussion? I think at that point there is some discussion about programs that be contained within the CMR facility. We can try to, in the next meeting, talk about more in terms of what the suite of capabilities are. We have a standard slide or two that basically that outlines our capabilities that were provided. And other than that, I'm a project guy, so I really don't get into the programmatic end. I could try to launch it over to Dr. Tim Nelson for more information about this topic. But again, Rick and I are project guys. We're building shells, glove boxes, providing equipment, but we don't really get into the nuts and bolts of what the equipment is for, who gets to use it, what's the relationship between nuke facility and PF4 in terms of operations and capabilities. Again, this was formatted, this briefing, for project-specific type of information.
Follow-up? Well, you know, quickly, Steve, yes, I've read the Complex Transformation Programmatic Environmental Impact Statement a couple of times, and it doesn't really address non-proliferation programs. And in an attempt to press my point, if the federal manager of the NNSA Los Alamos site is making public statements that the nuclear facility is necessary for non-proliferation programs, that needs to be backed up and justified. And I'm not aware of any justification to date for that in neither the complex transformation documents nor in the recently released federal budget. But in any event, next meeting, it'd be nice to have somebody here from both NNSA and the lab from non-proliferation programs to make sure that this is not the latest, you know, popular rationale for building this $4.5 billion facility.
Sort of a list of capabilities we're providing. The non-proliferation program, Jay, there is capability within the current CMR. There is a current program that goes on. So, again, we're providing a laboratory space. What goes on in that space will change year to year depending on NSA missions, what's happening in the world politics, et cetera, et cetera. So, but I heard your comment. You would like to understand the list out.
Okay. And I've noted it on our parking lot.
Scott Kovac, Nuclear Watch, New Mexico. I was wondering, I don't see on slide 12 the NF baseline, performance baseline. When do you expect, or do you have an idea when you might?
Can we jump to the timeline in the nuclear facility? Probably slide.
Where is there?
Here it is. each one of these is a chunk to the baseline. The infrastructure package, Scott, will be every baseline package we put together, a fixed mission scope. We'll go through the external reviews before we release that onto the street and get bids. But we will, at that point, set up and establish what the scope is, what its cost and schedule will be. The road movement is part of that, it's ancillary to the nuclear facility, but it's needed for us to construct. The base mat, the foundation coming up, is the next set of work. But again, that's mostly concrete. But the rest of the structure and then the rest of the project will be out in the 2014 timeframe. And at that point, we will have established everything in terms of the entire project to go.
So the actual final cost estimate for the NF on this chart is it the pink? Is it somewhere in right. FY13 or so?
14.
Scott Kovac with Nuclear Watch.
Thank you.
Yes. We will have that about that time frame for the final cost. At that point, we'll know everything. Yes.
Next question.
Hi, Joni Ahrens, Concerned Citizens for Nuclear Safety. So when you were talking about the nonproliferation, what percentage of the facility is going to be used for nonproliferation programs?
So my name is Tim Nelson. A little bit of what we're talking about is when you have analytical chemistry or materials characterization, I'm going to give you an example and then we'll extrapolate it to nonproliferation. But you'll have a capability, and I'm going to pick on an ICP mass spec. So it's my analytical chemistry instrument that looks for very small quantities of what most people would consider to be impurities, something you don't want. Could be iron or other metals. And when you use that piece of equipment, you use it for lots of different programs. So when Don was talking about nonproliferation, I'm going to use that ICP mass spec to support nonproliferation. I also use it to support weapons programs. I also use it to support lots of other programs, including environmental programs. So that's a little bit different than in the context of I have a nonproliferation program that very specifically has this space and is operating in the space, and I can break it out. So I don't know if that answers your question. I know if you looked at the nonproliferation programs that you referred to in the context of MOX, for the most part right now what we're doing at LANL is called the Ares prototype, and we're disassembling weapons and producing oxide that's to be shipped to the Savannah River. That's feed for the MOX fuel fab facility, but our part is to actually take the weapon apart and put the weapon material in an oxide form in a container that can be stored. Now, that material needs to be analyzed, and it's analyzed through the capabilities that are provided by the existing CMR building, what would be the CMR nuclear facility, as well as the radiological laboratory. When you talk about quantities of material, when we split the rad lab and the nuclear facility into two separate buildings, those processes, those analytical chemistry processes, were split according to how much material they needed to do a sample, to run a sample. So the types of processes, analytical chemistry processes in the rad lab, use much smaller quantities than the analytical chemistry processes that are in the nuclear facility, which use much larger sample sizes. I think I hit most of the questions.
Follow-up question.
So now we're back into the dual-use arguments that went on in the mid-90s, it seems to me, because you're not necessarily making that distinction between the weapons program and the non-proliferation work. So.
Yeah, I can't. This is Tim Nelson. I can't. I don't know what the arguments were in the 90s, but I can tell you what we're doing. It's multiple use, so it's actually essentially every program, which is what Steve said in his opening remarks relative to the mission need. Every nuclear program at the laboratory uses these capabilities.
So then I have a question or two for Steve with regard to the map.
The infrastructure map?
Yeah. Can you point out where MDAC is?
MDAC is... Maybe about this area.
Okay.
Maybe farther.
Just east of the Pecos Parry Road here.
This right, it's just east of the Pajarito Road Pecos intersection. So it's off to the left of the picture.
55.
And we're not going to use it.
So where is this? Where's the entrance to Area G then? Where's the entrance to TA 54?
Let's go to the third or fourth slide of my presentation. I think that might be the aerial view. No, one after this. Yeah. I'm not sure. Yeah, you can. Well, it curves. This little curve right here is actually, I believe, the intersection that's shown just to the east. Yep. So, yeah, we're located down in this area here, and it's cut off. But the TAs are in there, 60-something and 60, was it 60?
63, 46.
So are we down where Beverly Ramsey used to have her office in Stewart?
I see some people nodding their heads. I don't know.
Between there and the current 55.
MDAC, Joni, is right up in there, this area here.
So, are you disturbing new land? Do you have to have an EA or some kind of
analysis?
Because it seems like you're breaking up new land.
We have those, Joni.
You already do?
Yes.
And were they released for public comment? Or?
No, I don't believe they were, Nicole. They were supplemental analysis that I don't think floated to that level. No, Joni,
because
I do believe that...
Categorical exclusions or what?
I'm sure with the actual determination. But in terms of the analysis level, I can get back to you in terms of what level of NEPA determination. In terms of the use, most of this area has been been disturbed and used before and has grown back, and it looks like it had never been used. It's full of pinyons right now and junipers.
Okay, other questions? Saw a hand over here.
Yeah, Dan Williams with the Bridge to Nowhere. I just got a couple really stupid questions here. Over the last 7 years, what has caused the estimate to go from the $600 million to $4.5 billion? Did somebody get a raise? And why do we need a facility to make so many triggers? Don't we have enough?
First question. This is kind of handy. Let's go to the slide that shows the dates. There you go. When the first initial budgets were out was at CD0, in which we started establishing, what is the range? And basically all we have is a paper and a concept, and that the process in which we develop projects, we're forced to give a number and try to start ballparking. Is it, how big is it? And that's without any definition. That's at the preconceptual stage. We had to go through conceptual design. We're now at preliminary design. As we go forward and baseline these projects, we do establish firm fixed price, a firm price baseline, in which a cost and schedule baseline that we provide to Congress, and we say we now have enough information, we have enough design fidelity to go forward and commit to a level of performance in which we'll bring in the projects. That happens in our critical decisions 2 and 3. For instance, the Radlab Utility Office Building. When we had enough information for that facility in 2005, we established a baseline. And we have thus, since as of this last month, have brought in that facility for that baseline. Same thing happens for the equipment phase. When we have enough design information in which we are ready to commit to a performance baseline, is what we call it, it's at that time we will determine what that cost and schedule will be for performance. You have to have enough information to make these decisions. Right now for the nuclear facility, we don't have that fidelity yet. We're on our way. We think we've marched through a number of technical issues to make sure that we have the right safety set that goes into that facility. So we're getting close. There's a lot of interaction with a lot of external groups. Not only do we provide the government's estimate, but that government estimate has to be externally and independently estimated and reviewed to the decision maker. And the decision maker for this project is up at the deputy secretary level. So he wants to make sure that not only that we bring in the amount of information, but that he has external reviewers that look at this information and say, yeah, it's going to cost this much, or no, I think these guys need to go go at it some more and actually develop more information and understand the risks and confidence that are associated with that performance baseline. So early on, yeah, we didn't have enough information. Now I can say, yeah, we got volumes. We have things that are getting large in terms of the amount of fidelity that goes into specific individual systems or components.
So the question is that estimate going to go up?
Yeah, I mean, are we saying this is it, it's not going any higher? Or are we saying, hey, this is still open to go higher?
It depends on on many factors. I mean, not only you have to price of fuel, you say it go up and down every day. Price of concrete, what's happening in the world market for concrete. There are a lot of factors that go along with it. I hope not, but it is our duty to try to vector in and try to put out the best planning information possible. But it's that time where we get to this critical decisions 2-3, where we have the package. That's at that time and moment we will use the best factors that we have out there and then lay it on out.
Other questions?
Greg Miller. When you make these cost estimates, what are the assumptions that you're using about concrete and steel and construction costs? Are they sort of assuming they're flat from here on out, or you build in a certain percent? Since it's volatile, you can't really tell, but what are your assumptions in short?
This is Rick, because my team is responsible for trying to put something together. So you start with what you know today, try to estimate what escalation factors are going to be for prices of commodities for years in the future. And I don't know. Commodity prices are going to go up. I don't know when.
What did you use?
So today we have used, DOE has published escalation factors. And I think because they're somebody's best estimate to begin with, that's what we start with when we give that information to DOE. And they have actually published those, and I think they're in the, I think they're available, I don't think they're for secret or anything. And they right now they currently go to 2018. And so one assumption you have to make is because they're flat in rate, they're about 2.1 or 2.4% out in those years, and the assumption you have to make is that they stay at the same rate as they're going forward. So when we give an estimate to DOE, we use their escalation rate. So you don't assume everything's going to stay the same. You don't assume they're going to go down, they're going to go up. Because of a building of this size, in terms of quantities we're talking about, and for example, we're talking about 130,000 cubic yards of concrete in the building. And Portland cement, which is a key component of concrete, can often wind up going in places around the world where the world market will tend to drive availability of some of those materials as you go forward. And that's a variable that you cannot plan for. So part of that chart that I showed you that talked about baselining the last portion of the job, which is going to have the biggest dollar values in it because it's the balance of the facility, in 2014 is intended to provide the department and then ultimately the department's commitment to Congress with certainty that yes, we know enough at that point, it's a short enough duration that we can then not have to assume what escalation is going to be, we can go buy it right away, put it in the warehouse, put it in the laydown space, and manage in that particular way. Probably a longer answer than you wanted.
Another question? Yeah. Do you have a published life cycle cost for the facility as per your LCAM order?
There was a life cycle cost. So the answer is yes, it is being updated. There was one that was done back in the early days of the project as part of the DOE decision process. That number gets updated. My team is now trying to prepare for an NNSA review of the cost of at least our current plan so they can figure out what they need to program in budget space, because you have to be ahead of commitments in budget space to given a congressional cycle. For example, DOE's input into the budget process for fiscal year 12 has to be done in July. So we're doing some of that work now for programming space, and that life cycle cost would be updated as part of that exercise.
I think the last one, Jay, or Greg, was 2005.
Dan Williams with Nowhere again. My second part of that question was the world is trying to reduce nuclear. We really don't need it. And even the president is on that wavelength why is it that we're moving forward with making more of these triggers? I mean, what do we need them for?
Well, that's a big question. There's a lot of thoughts to all that. And first of all, the budget request for FY11 and the planning numbers that go forward from 11 to now, I think, 15 or 16, are the administration's requirements. That is part of the president's request for this. I think about the late February timeframe, I think there's an interesting article that Joe Biden wrote and talked about, try to put this thing all in perspective. And that information is, we could share that, but I won't even venture into the politics of what we need and where this all stands in terms of mission importance and why do we need weapons. That's not for us project guys to question. Ours is that performance baseline. When you put it out there, we're the guys that get hung for that. We're the ones that have to bring it in for that. In terms of what the capabilities are from our programmatic need, that's at a much higher level. That's at the administrator's level and with the executive office. So I wouldn't even dare enter into that. That's a big question, and I can appreciate it, but that's not for Rick and I to answer.
Roger Snyder, I'm with the local NNSA, and I appreciate your question. I give you the reference for Biden's article. It's in the Wall Street Journal. It's a full-page spread if you haven't had a chance. But also there were several questions about nonproliferation tonight, and I wanted to give you a reference that you might want to go read because it's fairly recent. Administrator D'Agostino gave some remarks at the second annual Nuclear Deterrence Summit. I saw it on C-SPAN 3. I haven't read the actual detail, but I saw most of it on C-SPAN 3 the other day. And he tried to draw the integration between the nonproliferation and the weapons side of the house together, and also the response that we have worldwide. So there is some good remarks there that augment are very current that might be good reading. I just wanted to point you to them. So you got the Wall Street Journal and how that falls into from the vice president's perspective, and a fair substantial portion of Congress is also lined up with that. And then also how that leans into our nonproliferations worldwide that's Administrator D'Agostino brought together just recently on February 17th. So those are the two articles I would suggest you might give you some direction in that, realizing that this is a projects meeting, but that gives you some program side. I just wanted to add that and give you a little additional source.
Good evening. I'm Marianne Naranjo from Honor Our Pueblo Existence, based at Santa Clara Pueblo. And on page 14 of the presentation, the Radiological Laboratory Utility Office Building, very impressive for the awards that were received. Congratulations. My question is, who recognizes and presents these awards to Lano and Los Alamos?
Okay. Two players. The first one, in terms of the LEED certification, is a U.S. Green Building Council for the United States. That's an independent council. We'll submit our application. We're planning to do so this summer. That's independently validated, and they're not paid by us. We submit into an application fee. They come back and provide us and tell us, they add up all of the factors that go into that and see whether or not we are indeed LEED Silver certified. We're hoping for maybe even gold in some cases, but that's up to an independent panel, U.S. Green Building Council. The pollution prevention awards, in which Rick had alluded to, I believe, is out of NNSA, if not DOE, out at headquarters. So that's within the department itself. Looking at all the projects and all the operations throughout the complex, that is DOE or NNSA. So we're up against all of the other laboratories and offices.
Okay, we're almost at the end. We are at the end of this window, but there are a couple of hands that were raised. I'd like to let them ask their questions, and then we'll have another question and answer session after the other presentation.
Yes, Dave McCoy, and I understand that the nuclear posture review will be essentially what it has been for the last 50 years, which is I tuck myself under a chair in the fetal position. Now, as I was looking at this building here, I was thinking to myself, gee, that looks like it'd make a really nice university building or a nice hospital building. But what we're going to get is something that's related to making nuclear bombs, you know. And then the thought occurred to me that, you know, what a waste of mines and concrete and money when there's so many needs in this country, you know. And you can talk about Joe Biden or any of the others, and it's not going to really register with the Americans who don't have reasonable jobs and that are living out in encampments and this kind of thing. And for my money as a citizen, this is just a big waste of time. It's a dangerous effort. It's not going to improve world relations whatsoever. And you can talk about all the technical cost figures and the timelines and all that stuff, and it's just a net zero.
Okay, I'm not sure there's a question there, but
there
it's
is no question.
Last question before we move on.
Penelope McMullen with the Loretto Community. I have a comment and then a question. And the comment is about Dan's question and the response being that the reason all this money is given to have the capacity for more nuclear plutonium pits is that it's in the president's request. However, the administration met with the leaders of the labs, and it's because the labs wanted that the president requests it. Okay. Now, my question is about the $225 million that's in the fiscal year 11 proposed budget. How much of that is for the nuclear facility? And then I have a follow-up question.
This is Rick Holmes. The spread would be somewhere in the order of magnitude about $55 million to the radiological laboratory equipment installation activities. And then the balance would be about $170 million would go towards nuclear facility activities, some of which are design, some of which are award of vendor contracts for them to do design, and some would be for the start of the initial infrastructure construction, the warehouse and preparation of laydown spaces and that kind of thing. And that will shift a little bit, but just generally about a $55 million and $170 million split between the two.
Okay. That partially answered my follow-up question of what it was for. So there is a hunk. I guess most of it's for salary. And I'm wondering, wow, how much are these people being paid? Because that's a lot of money. But then you also said some of it was for construction, but you can't start any construction in fiscal year 11 because you have to get the air permit first.
The infrastructure package. So what we would do, keep going forward in the charts. So the preparation of the laydown space is not part of the nuclear facility construction itself. This could support other construction projects at the laboratory. Certainly they're not as big as ours. So this is not part of that particular permit activity. And as Steve talked about, there was the consultations done to make sure that this land could be used for its purpose, and we'll share that information as we can go and get it, and that was done. So this activity does not tie to the need for the air permit. What we've had in discussions is that the permits for the nuclear facility are necessary before we start building the actual nuclear facility itself.
Just one clarification. There is the batch plant we're staging out here.
Yeah, that's right.
That would obviously need an air permit.
Correct.
And that was on the slide. So.
Thanks. Thanks for that clarification,
Steve. Did you get with the NED about that? That you don't need an air permit for this work here?
No, I'm saying that the batch plant will need a permit.
I understand, but for this work here, do you need an air permit? Have you already met with NMED about this?
It's a determination we make ourselves on what is an applicable source and what we need to go in for a permit.
We're running over our schedule a little, and I don't want to cut the party's presentation off, so if we can move along.
Okay.